Welcome to Wellness Spring. In today's episode, we're joined by the dynamic Dr. Gandhi Rose, a vet, author, and soil advocate, who uncovered a shocking truth. The chemicals in our land are making us sick. Yes, many of you know this. However, through her work, she connected the dots between poor animal health, human health, and depleted soil, leading her to transform her approach to farming and food. In her book, The Food Solution, Eating for Today to Save Tomorrow, she reveals the food we eat shapes our health and the planet's future. We'll explore why knowing where your food comes from matters, the vital role of local organic farmers, and simple steps that can protect your health starting now. So let's dive in. Welcome, Gandhi, to Wellness Spring. It's so lovely to have you on the show.
Hello, Beverly. Thank you. It's an honor.
Pleasure, the honor's all mine. And Brian and I were so grateful for meeting you. We're grateful to the weedy gardener, David Trode, for introducing us. And also, it was lovely to actually visit you at your vet clinic in Inverell. And thank you for our gift. I don't know if you can see it, but for the listeners, it's called The Food Solution, Eating for Today to Save Tomorrow, which is Dr. Gandhi Rhodes' beautiful book, which we could do a podcast on each of the chapters.
Definitely. I published a book a few years ago, like maybe 3 or 4, and I wrote it in the big 2018 and 19 drought, when I had really, the fires were racing through Australia. Were you in Australia during the drought?
Yes, I was heartbroken. We'd come to visit family and friends, and we got stuck in the fires, and obviously the droughts followed. And in 2019, in the beginning of 20, I believe was the worst fires ever, and millions of animals died, which was heartbreaking. And as a healer, I spent most of my holiday sending healing and reaching out to lots of different groups to send healing, thoughts and prayers and so forth. It was devastating.
And living through it and seeing like my clients' cattle die, everybody had to destock. The fires killing so many animals. Like, we had koalas being brought to the clinic all the time, and they were in kidney failure by the time they arrived. Excuse me. It was tough, like tough for everybody, for the farming community, for the whole town. Shops closed down. The sky was a yellow brown for weeks on end. And the weather felt, it was the worst fires for us were probably in September, which is early spring. It shouldn't be over 30 degree hot, and I would wake up in the morning and think, have we humans really done this? Like, we really changed the weather. We really destroyed planet Earth so much that this is happening now, and I was so devastated. And I had all of this knowledge about medicine, and as a veterinarian, not just about like a doctor, a doctor knows about one species, which is the human, and then within that one species, probably specialized in only the human's eye or the human's kidney or the human's gut, and never will these meet, like in a holistic sort of view. While as a veterinarian, you do all species from a snake to over birds to cats and dogs and cattle and horses and pigs and goats and all the other animals that you might or might not get into your clinic. And then within these species you do everything. So I would do horses' teeth and a horse with colic, and I would do repair broken leg in a cat, you know. So you get a really good broad view of what's happening in sort of like the fauna, you know, systems.
Yeah.
And because I lived and owned a farm for a few years, you learn about the flora as well as, you know, farming systems or cattle and agriculture and ecosystems themselves. And then, so we have got as veterinarians quite a nice worldview to connect all of that wisdom, you know. And within that knowledge, I was sitting in my little country town watching the disaster unfold, and that prompted me to write a book about what the food system has to do with climate change, and that it's not just fossil fuels, and what the food system has to do at the same time, you know, same origin, creating all these different problems. And another, you know, one is the climate and the hydrology of landscapes and the rivers and oceans and reefs and the disappearing of the insects. And on the other hand, it's what we are eating and what does that do to us and the animals that eat that stuff. So that's what my book is about.
For the listeners, it is a very good read. And if you know nothing about animals or the land or the food, it's a very big eye-opener. And I think a good way forward for people to understand what they're eating. And you unpacked a lot there just now. And could you discuss more about how us humans are affecting the climate?
Yes, of course, there's fossil fuels, right? You know, like, and as much as the fossil fuel industry wants to make us all believe that they're not the problem, they are, of course, part of the problem. I agree with that they're only part of the problem, and that a big other aspect in us humans affecting the climate has been very forgotten. And the two big things are, one is that we released, of course, we released through modern farming systems. Just to put it in perspective, how big we are talking about. So I'm not talking about fossil fuels now. I leave that to the fossil fuel people. You know, like, I want to encourage people to have a wider look at where the problem comes from, but then also where the solution is that is in our hands. So this is a really empowerment of the every person, like you and me, who are not in politics, who are not farmers, who are maybe sitting in a city and eating, which is most of us nowadays, where those people are standing there and think, yeah, but what can I do? You know, I'm just here at a friend's place in Melbourne, in the city, and I look at all the people having fun, you know, going out, and they would all be very helpless and hopeless of like, what can I do? Because, you know, like, I can't stop the fossil fuel industry. But this is what you can do. So to come back to where do we actually affect climate, every single one of us, apart from driving a car, is that from all the land mass on Earth that we use for producing food for us, it's about 40% of the land mass on Earth. And 40% of that is already desertified, meaning it became desert. And a lot of the landscapes are poisoned to death. And let me explain what happens there. So with every food that is grown, and I'm not talking about cows now, we can talk about them later, or herbivores, I'm talking about producing wheat for your bread and cakes and biscuits, canola for your seed oils, which make you sick anyway, barley, wheat, maize, corn, and rice, and everything else that is in big monoculture cropping systems. Yeah, and those areas will get chemically treated by most farmers in every industrialized farming system in the world, which is most of them. And they spray it with chemicals, with herbicides, to kill all the plants on it. And with that, they kill the microbiome of the soil, the microbes, the protozoa, the earthworms. And when that all dies, then the substance, the organic matter, the humus, you know, that black, thick, juicy, water-absorbing, chocolate, dark-colored earth, which should grow our food, that gets killed by that. It becomes rock hard. And then that is another carbon dioxide source to add to the increasing concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere. So that's one, that we released carbon not just from fossil fuels, but massively from agricultural soils. So when the microbes go and the organic matter goes, so goes the water holding capacity. And that is the forgotten greenhouse gas, is water. Water is about 90% of our greenhouse gases is water vapor. So when we talk about the water release from all of that, we have now got atmospheric rivers in the atmosphere. You can see them from space, where there is like huge water vapor masses, and on one hand, all that water vapor blocks sunlight coming in, so it would have a cooling effect. But it is sort of distributed as a vapor and not really in heavy clouds. But then also, this is responsible for the floods, because then all of these water masses of billions of liters of water stuck in the sky, when they suddenly hit a cold front, then you get the floods. So water and the destruction of the world's hydrology, the release of water, the drying of wetlands, the evaporation from agricultural land, that is a huge, huge, huge global warmer. And the other thing that really also heats up Earth is when we spray out these fields and we have nothing growing on them. And every listener can see that. Next time you drive around in the countryside, have a look. You will see some really lovely green, lush grass where cows are, or sheep are, or horses. And the ground should be, in a good farming system, should be covered with vegetation. And then you have a contrast where we are cropping cotton, canola, maize, wheat, sunflowers, and so forth. And if it's spread out, it will be just the bare soil. And that way, that, as you stand on a dark surface and it will be very hot. Like, we have measured 70-degree soil heat re-radiating. 70 degrees, like, this is boiling. You just can't stand there for 1 minute. While next door, where there's grass and trees going, it will be 27 degrees. And there is a formula, that says for every, and this formula might be wrong, but for every degree Kelvin that it rises, there is a 4 times exponential, like, so 2 times 2 times 2 times 2, increase of heat. So this effect is not little. It's on 40% of the 40% land mass on Earth, where we are re-radiating huge amount of heat, that then can't get out anymore, because we've increased cloud cover and we've increased CO2 up there. So it's huge. How we grow food has got a massive, massive impact.
Well, when I think of climate change and the water in the air, that's the main thing I think about is the bare land. Because, as you know, Brian and I travel in a camper van around Australia looking for land. And the reason we didn't buy the first plot that we've seen is because we were so devastated by the degraded land that we were seeing. It's really heartbreaking. And Brian, when he first started as an engineer, went out with a friend in a plane, and he noticed when you fly over brownfields, obviously it's hotter and you rise more, and then you go over the forests and so forth, or covered fields, and you notice a difference from the plains, and just from simple science in school. We know, hot air rises and then obviously the clouds form, and this is how the water system happens to cool down the land.
Yes, exactly. That's a really good example of flying over landscapes and having a bird's eye view what's happening. And then also, like, I don't fly a plane myself, but I fly normal airlines, and when you look down and you see the scale of it, like, we're not talking about little country in Australia, we're talking about big. So the impact of what you eat and what you buy and which industry you support is huge. So yeah, and then plus pesticides, when we spray out fields with glyphosate, and if you're not a farmer, you wouldn't know this. So this is my thing, for everybody in the city. If you are, well, hopefully you are aware, but if you're not, this is how it works. So a farmer has got a field, and then he'll spray over with Probably with glyphosate, which one of the trade names is from Monsanto, now belonging to Bayer, is Roundup, but it runs now under lots of other different names. So this is a chemical that will kill everything that's a plant. But not only that, it kills, and people say, oh, it doesn't matter for people. It has got no impact because we don't have that biochemical pathway in our bodies that glyphosate destroys. And A, this is just one pathway of many, and glyphosate destroys other pathways for several reasons, you know. But this particular pathway that Bayer and Monsanto will mention is called the shikimate pathway, which is a pathway in bacteria, algae, protozoa, plants. You know, so yes, we as mammals do not have it, but the things that produce our food do. So if you stop that cycle and that pathway, you know, you're killing not just the plants, you know, the grasses or the weeds that you wanted to kill, you're also killing all the microbes underneath. And the runoff goes into the rivers, and then we kill the algae in the rivers, and then we kill the bacteria and the microbiome in the rivers and the microbiome of the earth. And when you eat food that has grown with Roundup or glyphosate, you kill your microbiome. So this is where, yes, glyphosate is not without consequences. So the farmer sprays the paddock out with that, and quite often two or three times, you know, to get the next lot of weeds, and then they will plant into that. And then, because now the plant is weakened, because the soil is dead and not delivering the nutrients that the plant needs, the farmer needs to put fertilizer on. And the fertilizers are industrialized fertilizers. So nitrogen, for example, is extremely energy hungry to produce. And so we put that on our paddocks. And nitrogen is not good for the soil either. And the phosphorus in the NPK fertilizer also kills the microbes. So, you know, we are doing more damage. Now the plants are weaker again, and then the insects come and they will attack. And if I look, for example, at the moment in my garden, you know, with it being heat stressed, and in especially in the areas of my garden where I've got quite a large garden, you know, where the soil is not healthy because I haven't healed it yet, the plants are weak and the insects will come. You know, and I could put insecticides on and stuff on, but it would not make a healthy plant. So, you know, if I, and in the parts of the garden where the temperature is good and it's a bit cooler and I've got good soil, the plants are really healthy. So when a farmer now has to save his crop, has to spray insecticides or fungicides, that all adds up to the toxic load, you know, that we use to produce our food. So to know that, you know, what happens on the land producing the food for all of us is very empowering, because most of us want to do good. And I was sitting in a restaurant yesterday, you know, with a piece of just a pita bread, you know, and I said to my friends, you wouldn't think that that little piece of pita bread now in my hand here is actually destroying Earth, would you? And they're like, oh, no, you know, like, to make that connection from your plate and to think, oh, you know, this little, even vegetarian, you know, like, piece of bread has got the consequences that it does. You know, like, to make that connection, that's what I like talking about, because then I can choose to have that bread or not. It gives me something to do for climate. Yeah, to so the question would be probably, yeah, what do you do? What's the alternative? You know, and we can talk about that later, maybe.
No, it's like, once again, you covered a lot from like the monocultures as well, and you know how we're losing the fertility in the land, and we the topsoils. You mentioned the flooding, you know, it gets washed away, they're spraying. This goes into the waters, and you know, we had that dreadful Meninge fish kill last year where millions of fish died. And this is a global issue, not just Australia, because the chemicals are used worldwide. And you also mentioned about the consumers, the people living in the cities not being aware, which I totally agree with. And having podcasts like this and chatting about it, I think it's a great way forward to get the message out there because, people need to have an educated choice on what they're eating. And people living in cities do use Roundup and similar, and they don't realize what they're doing to the plants in their garden and to themselves because, the farmers limit the amount, the percentage, what they're using, and the average consumer will spray and spray and spray the weeds, if they've got plants or if they're growing vegetables, for example, because that's come in trendy to grow your veggies. So you're eating this high dose. And we were blessed to meet a farmer in Braidwood, Martin Royds, and he
Martin.
had had, yeah, so he'd had a chemical reaction to the Roundup. So he's a fifth generation farmer, because you know him, you probably know, and he was using chemicals or conventional farming, as it's sometimes called, and one day he just blew up. He had too much Roundup, and he had volunteers working on his farm, woofers. And when he went back, one of them went, "Can I help you, sir?" And he thought she was making a joke, and it's like, "It's me, Martin." But he'd blown up. He's a skinny man, and he'd blown up like a Michelin X-man. And he got rushed into hospital. And when he realized the damage he'd done to his body, it was like, no, oh my God, he just switched overnight, to natural ways of farming. And there's many of those out there. And in our travels, we're meeting quite a few farmers who are making that switch. And there's great people like Andrew Messiah, who's a big advocate for hemp, and he's helping people do it gradually in stages. So, it's affordable and doable. But you also, like, we need, instead of just having the monoculture, to, rotate crops in between and so forth. And you mentioned a lot about the food, and I know this is one of your passions, and you believe that we should all eat organic. So do you want to unpack that a bit?
Yes, sure. I always feel a bit awful, talking and sort of judging our normal farming system that it's bad. But I do know too many farmers that are sick and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, Parkinson's disease, motor neuron disease. I know. Yeah, because I live in a farming community, I feel really empathetic for the farmers being in the system. The machinery costs so much. It costs so much to put a crop in. It costs so much to harvest it. So they all live real lives, and they all have children in boarding school because there's not a school next door. And the ex just the expenses, and often they're owned by the bank. So there are a lot of farmers, even if they want to change, they're so stuck. So I just want to put that out there. This is not about judging people. We all ran into this system. The whole world ran into a system of consumerism, capitalism, destroying. We are all destroying the planet. I am too. I'm flying to other places. I'm using a car, so it's a collective sort of invitation to review our ways in a big way. So farmers, yes, I think they need all the support, and we have to relearn, because it's not a mathematical system anymore. Number one, Roundup. Number two, insecticide. Number one. Number three, fungicide, follow up with Roundup. That's a predictable-ish sort of way of farming. And it takes a lot of courage and guts. And often, like in Martin's case, or in my friend Mike McCosker's case, whose thyroid just got destroyed. And another friend of mine whose pituitary gland got destroyed, and like people with cancer will start to change their ways when sickness hits. So just put that in there, that it's not about judging, it's about helping and supporting and relearning how to farm in different manners. So where I come from more, so rather than I used to be a farmer, I had a farm, but I had to, the drought just, I had to just, like ran out of money, had to sell. But what I do have is medical knowledge, and medical knowledge after 30 years of day in, day out, every day of my life, nearly being a veterinarian and healing animals and all sorts of animals, as I said. So I saw in the 20 odd years that I've been in my little town, I've seen the health of the people decline. And it nearly seems like every second client that comes through my door has got, at least every second client has got a disaster lurking in the background. And they're always the same. They're cancer of all sorts. They are autoimmune-ish diseases like that we now know are autoimmune, like Hashimoto's thyroid, especially young women. Especially young women with endometriosis, which when me and you were young was unheard of. None of my friends had endometriosis. Polycystic ovaries, they were not prevalent when we were young. Alzheimer's is shooting up like dementia, is just exponential curve of an avalanche rising. Parkinson's disease, and then of course in the young children, autism, Asperger's, ADHD, and then the major depressive disorders and anxiety. So, and it's nearly like this, it's actually not that slow, but within our lifetime, it is maybe slow, and so the new norm is that of course you'll get cancer, and of course your mother will get Alzheimer's, and of course, a young woman has got endometriosis, and if of course we will have to have IVF to have a baby. All of these things have the shifting, slow shifting of a baseline sort of makes it look normal. And I'm nearly 60 years old, so I can look back and think, yep, but when I was young, we didn't have that. And I never had that in my life because I've eaten organic food from when I was about 20. So never been sick, never got, like apart from minor little things like I've got a sore left knee after an injury, like I'm a very fit and healthy person and I contribute that to the food that I've been eating. So then whilst writing my book with all the knowledge of my over 3 decades of health behind me, I connected the dots. Why is this happening? What is happening? And then you come to A, of course, food is highly processed nowadays, most of it in a packet, do not touch. B, we are eating the wrong foods because we got told that we should be eating grain and we should be eating, pasta and all sorts and fruit and vegetables. We should have margarine instead of butter. We should avoid animal fats and all of that. And then, of course, the third one is the highly toxic chemicals that we're eating with it, and suddenly we've got a health problem, that is huge. Like how many people are sick? It's and how much money does it cost the government, to support sick people? It's massive. So I connected the dots and found that yes, food is, how we grow food is A, the problem, climate, rivers and oceans, ecosystems, insects, biodiversity. Health of people, and animals. We feed our pets, a lot of grain. And the solution is also right there. Because if we just, in inverted commas, go back to growing organic, and I put that in inverted commas too, we can actually heal the land very effectively and very quickly and in time.
Yeah, that's so relevant for people to hear as well. And I'm vegan, and I know that the vegetables and fruit, 70% water content in most of them, and you're eating chemicals, and you mention organic, and I think Australia is one of the few countries that don't implement rules on legislations, what is organic and what is not. When I was living in France, you could go to a supermarket and you'd have your organic section and your non-organic section. So if you weren't buying directly off a farmer delivering your food, you'd know what is organic. And you mentioned pesticides, and I loved your podcast chat with Matt Londis and the fish veterinarian. And in it, he mentioned about Australia, for the last 30 years, haven't banned any pests.
Wow.
And yeah, pesticides, I should say, not pests, but you mentioned about the insects, with the fires and the droughts, but also with the chemicals on the land, everything's been destroyed. Like I know years ago when we'd go traveling, you're getting splattered by the pests, the insects on your windscreens and so forth. The first time I went to Perth, I was getting chewed all the time. You're like this, with the flies and the mosquitoes. You don't see all that now. And everything is needed. We need them for the soil. And like you talked about the topsoil disappearing. So the nutrients, the soil is not nutrient dense anymore. So, I find it very hard to find organic food while I'm traveling. And lots of my friends in the city say, how do you know organic? There was something on the TV about, the mislabeling of products, and it could be one article in the food that's organic and the rest is not. So, what advice would you give to them?
Oh, yes, the organic. Organic is a label. It should not be just a label. It should be actually normal, So when I talk about eat organic food as an invitation to do some good, then I am talking about, yes, what organic food should like. It should just be normal. It should be grown without chemicals. Chemical use in agriculture didn't start until after the Second World War. So it's a very new invention of humans to grow food with. Before that, go back and we were growing food in a more natural way. So organic does have a certain standard, I must say. So there are in Australia, I was certified when I still ran my cow herd with what is now ACO, then they were called BFA, Biological Farmers of Australia, and now Australian Certified Organic. And yes, there are guidelines. There's about 200 pages of things that you have to follow and that you have to do and that you can't do. There's allowed things that you can use as a fertilizer, for example, compost, and there's things like nitrogen fertilizer that you're not allowed to use. You're not allowed to use antibiotics in your animals and so forth. So the standards are there. Another certifying body is NASA, NASWA, and they also will certify. And it is quite strict, it may be not strict enough. It's inhibitive for farmers because it's expensive to certify. But when you see an organic label in a supermarket, like if you buy a packet of, or even in your organic shop, and you have a packet of sultanas, let's say, and you have got a stamp on, it looks like a little bud logo from ACO. I choose to trust that. Are there criminal farmers that maybe use things? Maybe, but I think most of the farmers that are organic for a passion of being organic, So I choose to trust that. And I'd rather trust that and think, yeah, there might be one in 100 or one in 1,000. Maybe, that cheats. Hard to cheat as well, because they will look at your bank accounts. And having written checks for $70,000 and more, for super phosphate fertilizer before we came organic, Like those numbers are really hard to hide. Like you as a business, you can't really hide your outgoings, for chemicals, So the risk that 1 in 100 might be cheating, I take rather than going to conventional sultanas in this case, that I know have had multiple pesticides. I know that they're harming the environment. So yes, trust the organic label. If nothing else, you're giving a consumer signal to the people that you're selling, that you're buying from. Yes, I like your product. Yes, I do support organic. And the more of us there are, the market will respond because everything is demand. If nobody buys organic because we don't trust it, Woolworths, Coles, even the organic shop will go broke and disappear. And the Coles and supermarket, Coles and Woolworths will think, oh yeah, nobody wants it, so we will not chase it. So it's a huge power in your consumer, but saying all of that, I think they have a lot to catch up on. And while I'm not a member of them anymore, I now look at where is the advertising from the organic certifying bodies. And when I asked them, they said, oh, we are only certifiers, we're not marketers. So who else is telling the story and defending the organic industry? I don't hear them. Like if anybody of the organic industry is hearing this, then please open your mouth and do a marketing campaign telling and teaching and empowering the consumer to actually know what you guys are doing. Because the organic industry has got a lot into this dispute where everybody says, yeah, but organic isn't even organic. And yes, probably, but lift your game. Like go and do some marketing campaigns and tell us the story, and help yourselves. And they can only do that if they would become more. So maybe there is even a place for other labels, where we can show every consumer, what they are buying.
Yeah, that's a great idea because I know Australia's strict with food being exported to other countries, and that's usually the main complaint with people saying, I don't buy organic because when I can't afford it, and because the article on the news, they're like, you can't trust it, and I've been saying to them, look, you can't afford it, but you're buying pills. And medications and different supplements for this, that, and the other. If you add up what you spend in a month or a year, and if you could eat healthily, and also, you can buy organic seeds for different things. Even in the van, I'm growing my own sprouts and different things that I'm able to. But it's like everything. If more people buy organic, then it will become more available and encouraging for other people to convert to being co organic farmers. And it's just about the taste as well, because you see the misshapen apple and you taste it and it's so full of flavor. But a lot of people have become, like Rachel Ward, the actress, says her cows were becoming junkies for the chemicals she was feeding them, and it was only because of her grandchildren that she thought, I want them to be healthy. And you mentioned mental health, and I know suicide, once every 10 days, a farmer's committing suicide. Depression is rife in farmers, and there's people can't afford to pay their bills because there's so much pressure, to provide crops. And if they've got contracts with the big supermarkets that you mentioned, if they have one blemish on it, they get thrown away. And then I've been told that it goes to the farmers markets, and then they buy them from the farmers market and sell them as, cheap food that you can eat. So it's the farmers that's suffering all the time because they have to provide the food and they don't get the full amount of money, we really have to support our farmers because without them, we'll have no food to put on our plate, whether it's meat, poultry, vegetables, or whatever. And we You talked about the nutrients. So, what nutrients do you think would be the best that people can look out for to stay healthy?
Well, there is some research that, and we all know that, like, so research is always just, may I just add that, research and science is always just backing up, finding one piece of the puzzle after the other slowly when you're, and if you're looking, because when and if somebody will pay you for it. Yeah. So science is very linked to business nowadays. But, we know that the more nutrient, the more healthy your soil is, the more nutrient dense your food is. And that's in a nutshell. So if you've got dead food, you can say you will have dead produce that you're eating. And there's no two ways about it. And this is how nature works. But if you have got rich soil, however you label it, yeah, you label it biodynamic or organic, or you don't label it at all, it doesn't matter to the soil. They can't speak, in language. So you have soil that is alive. Then you will have food that is alive and will have all the nutrients that you want in it. And this is how nature has done for 3 billion years since the world started. And the nutrient cycles have worked for a long, long time, for hundreds of thousands of years. And we, with our bodies, evolved with that. And your ancestors go back to the first bacteria that was ever there, uninterrupted. Not one of your ancestors was missing. Yeah, like when you put it into that time frame of holistic, vitalistic thinking, and being, then you can start to appreciate how magic, the whole life actually has evolved up to me sitting here today and you sitting over there. Like everybody before you, every bacteria that it went back to, through the apes and the whatever, through the first mammals, and that is you and I, uninterrupted. Every one of our ancestors was healthy enough to breed and have a baby that survived. And then there is us. Yeah. So our bodies have done it for a long time, evolved slowly until 100 years ago, we started playing around with chemicals. And maybe even 10,000 years ago, when we started to actually go from hunter and a little bit gatherer society to agrarians, where we suddenly, developed grains and wheat, and our numbers exploded and so forth. This is probably where the whole degeneration of soils and nature started, when we started plowing and farming, and became agrarians, so in a nutshell. But so nutrients have to come from the soil. This is another really good concept to actually get your head around, that you don't think about ever, but all the carbon, and the oxygen and the hydrogen and nitrogen comes from the soil. So these are your skeletal structures, fats, 100% carbon and hydrogen, nitrogen, carbohydrates, 100% from the air, harvested through plants, and then, from plants into you or through an animal into you. But all the other bits that make up your, oh, and proteins are that again, carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, but also nitrogen, all still from the air. So these are our big building blocks that everybody's just talking about: protein, carbohydrates, and fats. But then there is the other things that our bodies need. We need calcium for bones and teeth. We need iron for our red blood cells. We need vitamins, for all of our body functions, and they have minerals in them. Yeah, so our enzyme of vitamin B12 has got cobalt in the middle. So where do all of these things come from? You know that you need magnesium, because if you don't have it, you get cramps. Yeah, you know that if you don't have selenium, you will get cancer. You need copper for your connective tissue and your collagen. You need, what else do we have? Like phosphorus for your bones. Yeah, sodium, chloride. And then we need the vitamins. If you don't have vitamin C, can't live. If you don't have vitamin B1, you can't live. You know, if you are missing vitamin A, you can't live. Vitamin K, every single bit in your body must be there. And you take one of them out, and your body will not function. So these things don't come from the air. Where do they have to come from? Where are they actually made? Where do they come from? They don't come from your lettuce or your broccoli. Yeah, because they got to get into that broccoli from the soil. So how do they get into your broccoli from the soil? It's because it's in the soil already. The minerals are in the soil already, but they are unavailable. They used to be rock. Yeah. So you can't chip off a bit of rock and eat it. You know, like it will not get absorbed. So you need the microbes to essentially mine, like mining, like get them out of the soil to make them available. And the microbes and the fungi in the soil do that. So then they can go and give it in exchange for sugar to the plant. That's how you get them. So take the microbes out of that equation and have soil where it's not, where the microbes were just killed with Roundup or other chemicals. There's nobody that will mine and make available those minerals for you. So suddenly in your whole food chain, you have got a lack of any mineral, all the minerals. Then you put glyphosate on top, which chelates everything that's a plus. So iron plus, magnesium plus, calcium plus, all of those cations are locked up and chelated, you know, with a CH, chelated in the ground by Roundup. So not only do the bacteria not exist anymore to make these minerals available for you, if they are still there and they should be available, Roundup will keep them in the ground. So you food that you're growing is even more nutrient deficient. And then we come to the big family of B vitamins. And when you look at B vitamins, they're nearly exclusively bacterial fermentation products that are made in the soil. And the other place where we get it from is maybe from fermented foods, which not many of us eat anymore, and in the beautiful rumen of a cow, yeah, which is also a biofermenter with microbes in it. So they're all microbial products. So all B vitamins are exclusively made by bacteria and maybe by fungi. You know that all of that science is really in its infancy and will be probably for a while. So we need microbes in the soil. Then we're talking about essential amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins. And these essential ones are 8 of 20. That we they make up like a pearl string. You know, each one is a different amino acid, and then they're put into a line of a peptide, and then they're crumbled like this, you know, into a protein. And this is your muscle tissue, your blood, your enzymes, your brain, everything is protein. And the building blocks of that are bacterial fermentation products. You know, or bacteria made by bacteria. And then the bacteria are there like a fertilizer bag, you know, and they have the nutrients in them. Some they will spit out, you know, some they take with them when they go up and down a plant. And some of them they have to be eaten by a protozoa to then sort of crack it open and make it available. So all of that is now dead in our chemically farmed soil. And then you can see those deficiencies of amino acids, vitamins, and minerals go through the food chain and have you have a population. And we're not talking about the odd person. We're literally talking about everybody that is not eating their own food from healthy soils or finds really healthy food from somebody, you know, to buy. So we're talking about the whole population. So it's a huge problem, you know, like, and you can see these, of course, we are all still alive, but how well are we alive? How many people do have magnesium deficiency? Most, you know, like 80% of people. How many have B1 deficiency? Same. So we are sub, sort of, we're not dead, but we're not super alive and thriving either. But now we think it's normal. And then these deficiencies, you know, come out sooner or later in disease, you know, as do the accumulation of toxins come out sooner or later in disease. And I know this is a really long monologue, but I try to just get that knowledge together, so that everybody can understand this. Let's pick one mineral and one amino acid. Let's take the magnesium. And how many people are magnesium deficient? And if you don't have it, you will be nervous and anxious and brain fog and muscle cramps. And you feel too tight and probably high blood pressure. So I think most people can identify with that. And as the one amino acid, let's take tryptophan as an essential amino acid. And tryptophan is, so if you had bacteria making tryptophan and they are in the plant and it is in the plant, and then the plant you eat, or the plant gets eaten by an animal and then you eat the animal. So if you're lucky enough to get tryptophan, then you need to have it in your gut, and then you need the next lot of bacteria to make it into lots of different things in your body. One of them is serotonin. And then it goes up from the gut in via the gut-brain axis and the vagal nerve into your brain, into the center of your brain, into the limbic system. And it'll switch the light on of happiness, yeah, because that is your serotonin. So the impact of destroying the soil and not having those nutrient building blocks in the first place through the nutrients until it affects your mental health is huge. These are not little. And I could go on and on and on about the impact of what we are missing. So we are very, very sick society.
Yeah, and I love your passion and your knowledge and your education and getting the message out there, because even from the start, the most frightening thing I thought you said was everybody thinks it's normal now to have endometriosis, to be infertile, to have all these diseases, and it's like, I think the story was on ABC. There was a farmer from Ballarat, because every farm in that area were getting Parkinson's. And he was fifth generation, and they were going to him, "Well, your great grandfather, all the way down to your father, has it. You've got kids, why don't you stop?" And he's like, "Oh, well, chances are I won't get it." It's like, I think, through media as well, we're all brainwashed, and people don't think it's going to happen to them. But obesity is a global issue, and so many others. But I think for a parent, and I know you were blessed in your veterinarian clinic with the nurses with endometriosis and all the other diseases from the patients, you were saying every other patient coming in with the animal is sick with something, it's like the message is, the last 15 years, autism's on the rise, ADDH, if you want the future generation to live a happy, natural life, feed them healthy. And as the weedy gardener would say, have your own little garden, even if it's a raised little garden in the back or a little box, there's always someone. But just before we close, you're so passionate. You've been a farmer, you're a vet, and you've got your own clinic, and your soil health, you're researching now. What made you transition to, from farmer and vet to studying soil health?
What's a natural conclusion? Why is everybody so sick? And my awareness started when I was 20, when my mom got cancer, and she started looking at why did she get cancer. So she discovered Weston Price and the whole food movement, eat butter. So I've never gone into I don't have a sickness story to tell. A lot of change in people comes when suddenly your face blows up, and you have got or you get a cancer, and and then you change your ways. I was lucky enough that my mother did that sort of for me. Sounds funny,
Yeah.
but she had cancer, she learned, and then I started learning for a long time. And I was always, even as a child, I was interested in the natural world and love it very deeply. So that's my motivation behind it, you know, like that I think nature is just fabulous. And so I have looked at this for a long time. I've always looked at nutrition and an innate health of the body. Saying that, when I was a young vet, I followed the rules, you know, like I would feed that food that companies told me to use, you know, the prescription diets of all sorts. And I didn't question it much either. So it's an awareness that was just lucky for me and in my life that I, for marrying a farmer in Australia, I ended up on a beef cattle property. And I was privileged enough to see how breeding bulls and breeding cattle worked. And then first, you think about the cattle's genetics and you go and take a lot of pride in finding the right bull. Then you notice, oh my God, it's actually the grasses. You know, it's the quality of the grass that give me the quality of my cattle. You know, otherwise they will never reach their genetic potential, you know. And things like we sold a bunch of heifers to another farmer down the road who was on a really degraded piece of land. And those cattle came back to my place, to our place, about a year later and or 2 years later. And cattle from Gowrie, from our property, that were 1 year younger, were that much taller than the others. Same, exactly the same genetics, you know, like, but they did the other cattle on bad soil and bad grass, never reached their potential. So all of these incidents, you know, during the time they accumulate, it's just one piece of the puzzle coming from all of these different directions. And then, of course, you know, climate change and the drought and living in the country and seeing the death of everything around you know, and you just start looking closer and closer. And yeah, I think I was privileged enough to have to be able to look at it from different aspects and then put it together. You know, there's people that are heaps better than me in biochemistry or in medicine or in farming, you know, and I don't claim to be an expert in any, but I know relatively a lot about a lot. And this is comparing it to, you know, a vitalistic or a holistic world of view of medicine, for example, compared to a specialist and a reductionist point of view. You know, like there is eyes and nose and mouth and a pair of kidneys, and that does not make you into Beverly. You know, like Beverly is the combination of everything, and you take one thing away from her, and she will not be able to live. And I think in history, we have looked at science has done massive amount of discoveries, which I always add, those things were there already. You know, we are only finding out about them and understanding them. And whenever we suddenly understand, oh my God, we have got a microbiome in our gut and on our skin and our eyes, and that is actually really important. And how long have we done that for? You know, maybe since 2010, and some really smart people, maybe a little bit earlier, 10 years earlier, compared to history, the gut microbiome has been there all along. We just didn't know about it. What else don't we know? Like, time to be a little bit humble and think, you know, like if I reinvent growing food and I put a strawberry just on a piece of cork or coconut matting or plastic, and I put three or five minerals in that, for sure that'll grow me a strawberry. You know, like, I don't think so. Nature doesn't work like that. It's an interconnected system of multiple hundreds of biochemical pathways all working at the same time. Like, when you understand the magic of the body and how it all works and how it keeps you fit and healthy every day, we are able to have a conversation that I understand what you're saying, and you understand, and I can see you. And all of that together, it's a miracle, you know. And we are, with our human minds, come in and say, well, you know, I just draw this out and I just kill that, and we'll all be functioning still. No, we don't function, you know. So going back to how has it always been in evolution? Healthy soil, harvesting things and giving back to, you know, the nutrient cycle has all been there for us. We just destroyed it. And let's say we just didn't know any better. And then corporate, of course, comes in and makes money from it in our capitalistic system, which is, I think, a big, big driver of all of these things.
Thank you. Wow. As we're a wellness show, if there was one thing that you could suggest to the listeners to improve their health and their environment, which I think you've probably covered, what would it be?
Yeah, I would like to say something that would be triggering another podcast,
Yeah.
probably. And it will be very, very controversial to most, and probably, yeah, to most. So I would say to save the planet and yourself, eat you'll kill me. Eat grass-fed, pasture-fed, pasture-raised meat.
I'm
Like,
with you
what
100%.
Yeah.
And on that note, I would just like to thank you for all your wonderful words of wisdom. It's been an amazing, educational, interesting podcast, and I know the listeners are all going to benefit for it. And as you've planted the seed for another podcast, I would love you to have you back on the show, especially after, you continue your research with the microbiomes and the soil. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you. You know, and yeah, we're all just trying our best, huh?